Hello and welcome to Coin Talk, the official podcast of Bitcoin Shame. I'm Aaron Lammer, to be joined very shortly by Jay Kang. The year is tying up, so we decided to rewind the clock a little bit, talk about where we've been, where we're going. We're brought to you by Medium. You've got a couple weeks left to gift someone the gift that is a year of Medium. It gets you access to all kinds of writing. It supports writers. It's $50 a year. Medium.com/gift. Give it to someone you love. Let's do this show.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Saturday, December 8th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $3,399.
Jay,
back in the crypto cave.
Jay, back in the cave after a notable remote access period here. How does it feel to be back?
Good. It's good to not be in like the cave I was working in Industry City that was making the sound quality bad for several months.
Yeah, we apologize to all the listeners for that. We also apologize to all the listeners for launching this show at maybe like if you have been buying Bitcoin along with this show, you have not done well on that.
You might be broke.
Yeah. Like if we had launched a year earlier, we could have said, well, yeah, but like, come on, your entry was like under $1,000 Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I believe our entry, we started this show almost a year ago now. Bitcoin was like racing towards 10,000, I think, when we started this show, right?
Yeah. I think it was like our fourth episode or something when Bitcoin, while we were doing the show, crossed 10,000, right? For the first time.
I guess that was maybe before we launched the show.
Was it?
I don't know. It's hard to remember all this stuff because we were taping episodes before. But so we've been touting for a long time that there is a line in the sand and that I thought we would never reach it. I think you jokingly just like called out a number. I believe that number was 3,300.
Yeah.
That's unofficially been the Kang line for at least 6 months, if not longer.
For a long time, it was the way in which when you would ask, or when some of our crypto friends would ask, why are you not in Bitcoin? I would say, jokingly, I'm waiting for Bitcoin to crash to 3,300.
Yeah. I think it was your dad's idea originally.
My dad's line was 3,000.
3,000. Yeah, okay. So you wanted to like catch, you were going to try and like catch your dad there on a little bit of a squeeze.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think maybe also I misremembered what he had said, but he definitely said 3,000. But you know, when Bitcoin was at 9,000, when it was at 6,000, I never thought that we would approach this line this quickly.
So you're not actually going to stand behind the Kang line, because right now you could be like, "Oh, I always knew this was going to happen."
I mean, I could say that, but you know, you and I both know that that's a lie.
So what did you? You were always throwing cold water on my bull tarding. So
yeah.
What, like, in your mind, what was the worst it could get?
Oh, I mean, I don't think we're anywhere close to the worst it could get, right? Like, I think the difference in our perspectives on crypto is that you feel like there should be, and I don't know who's right, honestly, that you feel like there needs to be some sort of stabilization that is above the price that we're at right now, right?
I think so, yeah.
That there is enough organic interest in crypto, and that of all the people who were converted to crypto in the past year and a half, that some of those people have really sincere interest in the future of cryptocurrencies, and that they're going to build things, and that Bitcoin will continue to improve, that geopolitical events will take place that will like maybe increase the speculative value of Bitcoin again, and that all these factors could happen, and it only takes one or two of them to shoot the price back up.
I would say all those factors are almost inevitably going to happen.
Sure.
Whether they will shoot the price up, I don't know. Because if you'd asked me a year ago and said, there's going to be a mass sell-off of American tech stocks, like, everyone's going to fucking shit the bed.
Yeah, like
I would
Apple.
Have been like, oh, that's great for Bitcoin. That money's going straight into Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So
I also would have thought that was impossible, too. Like, you know, that Apple and Amazon and, you know, some of these blue chip tech stocks would all get crushed.
I think I agree with all the things you just listed, except my faith is a little shaken that they all point down Bitcoin Avenue. And I'm starting to wonder, like, all those things during a bull run would push the price up. Right now, it feels like nothing would push the price up. I'm wondering where all of these, like, sidelines buyers were. I mean, maybe they were all at the Kang line. Maybe the Kang line is more influential than we thought. What if all the institutional money was, like, set Diamond. Up right along the Kang line? Because I will say, I think this was 2 days ago now. We're taping this on Saturday. So I think it was Thursday we printed the low.
Yeah.
And I think it hit, like, 3210 maybe was the low.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
So, but it was only under 3300 for, like, a breath.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bounced around there, but, like, it's never gone way below 3300. So if everyone was thinking they were going to buy at 3300, that does seem like what happened so far.
Yeah, maybe Warren Buffett and Jamie Dimon listened to CoinTalk.
You never know who's listening.
My perspective on it,
sponsors of the world.
My perspective on it was not that those things wouldn't happen. My perspective on it was always that the confluence of events and coverage and hype that happened in 2017, that the air in it was much bigger than I think you or some of our other people friends thought, and that I felt like there was no reason for it to not crash down to even like $1,000, say, or even less.
And there still isn't.
And there still isn't. And that I couldn't think of a compelling reason why it would be worth any specific number. You know, like, why would it be worth $5,000 and not $800? It doesn't change the fundamentals of the technology or whether or not it's going to be used in, you know, whatever, right? But it does kind of mean that, like, it's hard to pinpoint an entry price. And so, yeah, 3,300 was totally arbitrary. And the reason why I picked it was partially because that's when my dad said he would buy at 3,000. But also because I felt like it was so low at the time. Like, you know, when Bitcoin was like, I mean, I was saying this, when Bitcoin was like at 11,000, 9,000, all that, right? Like, it just seemed difficult to believe that it would fall this low. But now that we're here, I will say that after having, you know, been a man of my word, right? Yeah. And because I know that there were a lot of skeptics that I would even buy at the Kang line. I did.
There was a lot of discussion about, because Jay did start wavering on the Kang line. And I will say the buy was smaller than I expected based on the fact that we're literally talking about someone who has gambled on esports.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like gambled pennies on esports. I mean gambled competitively with significant chunks of money on esports.
Yeah.
But you did buy 3,300. And I understood the psychology. Like, you know, to me, of the top of the bull run, my God, you know, really, this is cheap.
Yeah.
To me, now, today, I'm like, whew, like down this far? Like, is this really the time?
Yeah.
Because it feels like if you were like, okay, this is my entry point, psychologically, I would have probably felt that way at 6,000. I would have felt that way at 4,200. And now we're getting down to like a 3,300 point. I can very easily believe 1,800 now. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, it could go down to like $60. You know, like there's no bottom for this because there's, as everyone points out, there's no fundamentals, right? Like, there's no assets that the company is holding. Like, it's not like you know, like my former place of employment, Vice, where like at some point you're like they at least own that building, you know?
Well, but there are fundamentals in the sense that Bitcoin is an operating.
No, I agree with that, but in terms of like things to buy.
I would agree with you more about some of these altcoins. Some of these altcoins are like, once they're gone, they will leave no like ash upon this earth.
Yeah.
You know? It's unclear whether they've either had an office, an employee,
yeah.
if someone's even used their real name while working as a developer on them. Bitcoin, we know fundamentally the Bitcoin network still works.
Yeah.
Like, you can still do transfers on it. There's actually like a pretty significant hash rate considering most of the people who are mining at that hash rate are losing money. So if anything, I think the fundamentals of Bitcoin are stronger right now than they were at the top.
I don't
mean
fundamentals in the sense that like the technology of Bitcoin. I am more saying that, like, when you are taking a company, for example, and gutting the company dies.
Yeah.
Right? There is a floor to where, like, there is some asset that you can sell. So, like, for example, there might be a building they own, right? Or, like, there might be a lot of office equipment, you know? Like, there might be chairs that you might be able to sell.
I mean, that's a pretty trivial amount of money. I feel like most businesses that are going under, like, in a significant amount of debt.
Sure. Like debt, no, I agree with that.
Usually, like, debt is a part of the story of a big fall. Like debt coming due, debts that's not going to be made. Start thinking about bankruptcy
and
structuring how you sort of crash down.
Yeah.
This just feels like that, like, weird feeling of, like, parabolic in two directions, where it's like,
what's the other direction?
Up.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So you feel like we're going parabolic down right now.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, we're doing it in these jumps.
Yeah.
They feel pretty arbitrary.
Yeah.
To a person who's normally in, like, normally when you're like, okay, how much is this worth? How much is Apple worth? And it's like, okay, iPhone sales are weak. They're like worth 10, 20% less. It's sort of incrementally moving. And it feels like Bitcoin is just, like, only going to move in these, like, mega chunks right now. It just feels weird because I don't, like, right now we're, you know, we tested close to 3,000. When we were sitting at 6,000, which was not a comfortable position either, does the fundamental situation of, like, Bitcoin in the world feel that different between now and then?
No, and it's lost half its value.
Yeah, it just feels very arbitrary.
Yeah, it, like, took a massive dump. Like, I don't even remember the path down.
So we actually got, you sent me what I think was the first explanation of that drop below 6,000, which was really the biggest. If I think back on the whole time down from the all-time high, when 6,000 broke, that was the most surprising to me. And it was, I think, maybe like the knife in the back. Like, it really hurt.
Really?
Yeah. But it hurt me personally. And also, I feel like, it was the first time I started seeing some cracks in the armor of the, like, true believers, just a little bit, where people were like, whoa.
Yeah, that's true. The tone did shift a little bit. That's when everyone started being like, Biddle, or whatever.
Bildle. yeah. No, but people were talking about, see, I think people were talking about building at 6,000. They're like, during, like, a bear market, the true people, like, know that it's all about building. And then 6,000 broke, and it was like, is this just a bear market anymore?
Yeah, or is this thing useless?
I mean, it is, I think, ultimately, just a bear market. But, like, you have to have sort of taken a breath after that, dropping off that 6,000 cliff and been like, what's happening?
Okay, so what's this explanation?
So the explanation is from one of our favorite topics on this show, Korean exchanges.
Yeah.
We've always known that the Korean exchanges were lurking out there. You were always of the belief that Korean Ethereum markets were massively manipulated.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fact.
And we talked a lot. I think we talked on maybe the second episode of the show about how there's often a massive spread with Korea, and that Korea trades, I believe it's referred to as the kimchi premium.
Yep. It was like, what, 15% higher or something like that, right?
Yeah, pretty consistently as it went up, like, you started seeing these really wild spreads. And we've talked about potential causes for those. But it means, I think, that the Korean markets are often leading the way up and down. And people are looking to them as to, like, where are we going? Like, what's the next move here? So basically, as I understand it, BitHum, is it BitHum or BitThumb?
I think it's BitHum.
What does that mean? It's spelled thumb. Is that a word in Korea? Humb?
BitHum. I have no idea.
I think it's BitThumb, but they didn't put the extra T in there.
I don't think it is. I think it's BitHum.
Okay, we'll agree to disagree, but
because they don't speak English in Korea.
Out of respect for your cultural heritage, I will call it BitHum.
Okay.
So BitHum was, like, not the top player in volume. So even though it was leading, it wasn't the top player in volume. And then BitHum's volume, particularly around this 6,000 level, spiked to where they, like, jumped up the charts, and I think were showing the top volume. I'm not necessarily saying the Bitcoin markets, but just overall top volume. And so they're like, well, how did this happen? And they did like a series of promotions. I think one of them was called like the Super Airdrop Festival or something like that. Was that what it was called?
I think it was called the Airdrop Festival.
Okay. Yeah. Airdrop. The super I just added. The Airdrop Festival. So basically they were doing their own coin giveaways, and that was driving a lot of people to come on BitHum. And that was creating a bunch of volume. So this is the thing I didn't understand before. There's more volume on the way up than on the way down. So like during the bull run, lots and lots and lots of volume. That's a sign that prices are going up. People are coming on. They want to trade. Generally, the downflow is low volume. People just letting a price gradually drift by not trading, not buying, and selling. So basically, the volume supplied by the Airdrop Festival was one of the things that helped hold the $6,000 line. And then the day that promotion ended, we dropped off the cliff.
Oh, so it was, because you and I and a lot of other people were puzzled all the time by why Bitcoin was holding so steady at 6,000, right?
Absolutely.
It was like months.
Well, if this is going to be the bottom, then like, people usually buy the shit out of the bottom, and it's there very briefly. So we had this contradiction where we're like, we think this is the bottom, but we're stupid, and no one's buying it up, or we'd be up at 7,000.
So it was all driven by, or this theory at least says that it was driven in large part by the fact that BitHum, which is, I think, the biggest Korean exchange, which made a shitload of money during the bull run, that they were basically just doing like a Cyber Monday sale.
Pretty much.
For a few months and just giving away Bitcoin.
And other people were basically looking at, let's say, the foot traffic on their like Black Friday sale and saying, oh, well, it looks like there's increasing volume on Korean exchanges, which often lead the way. I'm not going to sell my 6,000 while Korea is surging. That sort of looks like the beginning of
What happened last time. Yeah,
except the minute they like turned off the sale, all those people just like bounced because they were only there for I think the airdrop was for like BitHum's own like thank you token or something. It wasn't for something good.
That, you know what? I think two things about this. The first is that I don't deny that this story sounds right to me, but then it also is hard to believe that like,
you're literally a Korea expert also. Literally.
It's my birthright. It's hard to believe that a small amount of free tokens would lead to this amount of swings in volume.
Perhaps you're underestimating people's interest in some free tokens.
Yeah, no, but then I was thinking about our episode about Initiative Q.
By many metrics, Initiative Q is the most successful cryptocurrency, though it is not a cryptocurrency.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how many people just sign up because it's free money or they see it as free money? And in a country that I would say more than any other country got completely wrecked, where there are more people who got wrecked and who is more crypto crazy than any other country, maybe like these types of giveaways were that a lot of people in Korea also thought that they were going to be the beginning of the end. Like, why not take some free cryptocurrency and hope that things resurface? I'm sure I would have done it. Wouldn't you have done it?
I would have definitely done it. And like, what is the most popular way to pump the price of your shitcoin? To be like, this shitcoin is going to have another shitcoin coming to you real soon. Like, I don't think this is a Korea thing particularly.
No.
I mean, this particular story takes place in Korea, but the human impulse is to do it. So my question is, was this intentional? Did the exchange, there's a lot of very, very sophisticated traders in Korea, clearly.
Yeah.
Did they look at how volume was playing and sort of know, as long as we keep these promotions alive, we can hold this 6,000, then like, let's get out. Because, you know,
well, why wouldn't they just get out with that then?
Well, because they made a bunch of money during that time by like having all the volume, and they knew that Bitcoin wasn't about to drop. And then, you know, they could have shorted it. Like, there's all sorts of ways they could make money.
That's true.
If you knew when Bitcoin was going to break 6,000, you're in a great position. as a trader.
Okay, so let's think of the possible explanations. The most simple explanation is that they were like, wow, Bitcoin is really not doing well and people are turning off of it. So how do we keep people on our platform?
Yeah, what's worked before? Airdrops.
Yeah, airdrops and free money. It's like if you go to New Jersey right now and you sign up for one of these, there's a lot of different companies that are competing to sort of own the online sports betting in New Jersey, which is now legal. And they have figured out, I think, and I think this is smart, that the things that appeal to people who are, you know, like more seasoned gamblers like myself, which is like, you know.
I think the technical term is degenerate.
Yes. The more experienced gamblers like myself care that the thing that we don't like about the New Jersey gambling system right now is that almost every single place has like a 15% VIG, you know, which
15%?
Is yeah, it's very high. Very high. So you're minus 115 on most even bets.
Can't you just own the market by coming out with a 10% VIG?
No, because I think what they've done instead, and I think there's a lot of reasons why they're doing that, and the first is probably just like the extremely high cost of licensing, I think. Instead, they've just been doing these incredibly good bonus giveaways.
So you get some of that 15% back in the form of
like
free money.
Let's say that you go and you deposit $200 on the FanDuel betting app, which is like a very well-designed and easy-to-use app. You immediately, I think, get $200 added to your account.
Yeah, this is where I thought the story was going in the first place, which is what's the, like, even more simplified, not even sports books, just casinos, anything. What's the best way to attract gamblers? Give them money to gamble with.
Yeah, yeah.
Give them, like, anyone who thinks they're starting with any free asset is so likely to gamble. Like, a lot of those people probably came for the free giveaway and then, like, bought shit coins or who knows. You know, it's like, just getting people, you know, butts in the seats here.
Well, it's like the oldest tradition in casinos on the East Coast is that you go down to Port Authority and you take a bus to Atlantic City, right? And when you get off the bus, they give you a voucher that's, like, $25. And your bus ticket was probably $22, but you can only use that voucher to gamble, right? Yep. And so you go in there and you pump it in a couple slot machines, and you get the fucking juices primed, you know?
Yeah. And that shit's gone like 10 minutes after you arrive anyway.
There was one time when I won like $150 on that voucher.
And the other thing is like, even if someone uses one of your vouchers and like hits on the slots, if that was on there very, like, right when they arrived, that money's going back in your pocket anyway.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
No one hits a slot at the start of their time in a casino and leaves. Goes home.
Yeah, that'd be terrible anyway. You just spend, like, you're going to end up spending 5 hours on a bus. But I imagine that's what they were doing, you know? And they saw that maybe things weren't going very well and they wanted to stave that off for a while. Now, whether or not that was a conscious decision to manipulate the price, I have no idea. It probably factored into their thinking some, but I think their major reason was probably just like, we're losing this many customers a day, which I imagine was a lot.
Yeah.
And all these accounts at least have gone inactive. How do we get them back actively trading again? You give them free coins to trade.
I take your point that in the exchange business, the exchanges are going to keep making tons of money as long as the crypto business continues. Regardless of what the crypto price is, what the popular coins are, like none of that shit really particularly matters if you're running a BitHum or a Bitfinex or particularly like a BitMEX that almost does better if there are these huge crashes because they have a huge amount of shorters who are using the service. Okay, but I have a hotter take for you.
Okay.
Here's my hot take.
Yeah.
This is a very petty, small example. Airdrop Festival. What if the entire alt shitcoin market during the last couple years of crypto was all one giant airdrop giveaway designed to bring interest into crypto that pumped up the price of Bitcoin? There was all these gamified ways to trade shitcoins to build Bitcoin, which is what everyone's basically trying to do.
I don't think that's true.
And
keep going.
To build volume. To build new people who are interested in crypto, who are using it every day, going on the exchange. I'm not saying this is a conspiracy, but I'm saying looking back, that was like the net effect of everything below Ethereum. you know? Yeah. Like almost all of this stuff, what it's really done is created trading volume and interest and given people airdrops so they keep coming back. And that airdrop ends up being a little bit of free Bitcoin. And all of this is priming the market for that huge run of Bitcoin. And now we're like dropped back down because like that was all just like airdrops. You know, that was all nothing. That's all hot air.
Like a fork is basically an airdrop.
Oh,
right?
Sure. Yeah. So forks, airdrop, new coins, new projects, like call it what you will. It's all like a door special to get people in the building on some level.
Yeah,
it creates volume.
I don't think that's even a hot take. Like, I think that's just right. I mean, nobody knew what any of these projects were. We didn't, you know? And we were just, anything that was going to be free or cheap, we were going to buy, you know?
Sure.
And we were going to, that was going to generate volume for that exchange. And that exchange was going to take a certain percentage of whatever transaction that we made, right? And they're going to build like some sort of user base, which God knows for whatever reason. And that's, I think you can actually see that in the difference between the way that Coinbase did business and something like Bittrex or what's the one that you were on all the time, Cryptopia did business, right? Where I'm sure that in retrospect, Coinbase wanted to keep it to three coins for a number of reasons, but all, I think mostly because they wanted to vet the projects, right? They didn't want to be stuck like with a bad reputation because they were selling air or like a felt false projects. But now that they're expanding a lot, it seems like they're probably doing that because they want to capture some of that volume because the number of people who are just coming on to buy Bitcoin has, I'm sure, severely dropped.
Coinbase is essentially a startup. And it's a startup that you could argue is like more successful than the asset that it's built atop. It's a great, great product. And products like Coinbase are measured in their daily active users, their monthly active users, the amount of stuff people are doing on them. And I don't think Coinbase ever could have been happy with just Bitcoin. It wants people doing stuff every day. This is like how people in Northern California think about the problem of technology and how to make a lot of money with it. And that was never going to happen if we just live in a Bitcoin maximalist universe. It has to be that like Ethereum amusement park plus. I don't know. Did you see the stuff about how they've added like the ZRX instant swap so people can sell? It's basically creating infrastructure for an entire ecosystem that's supposed to have hundreds of different inputs, I would think, ultimately, which is, I would say, a bigger win for Coinbase, but it's pretty different than what it started as.
If Coinbase started doing these types of like airdrop festivals, you know, because right now their reputation is pretty, like their reputation is not good, but if you look at the actual product, it's pretty reasonably safe, you know, and it seems less scammy than, you know, KuCoin, for example, where like I couldn't read half of the words that were on my screen at any given point. And there are all these like pictures of presents, you know, and stuff like Christmas trees on the site.
I feel like that's a good line is like, does your site have a picture of a present on it?
Yeah, exactly.
Can't A, can't B.
Or Christmas lights around, like, you know, around Christmas time with something in Chinese that says, here's the airdrop festival.
I would say that we could even draw the line as things that have given away things and things that haven't given away things.
So let's say Coinbase does their own version of BNB, right? Like the Binance coin. Yeah. And they're like, we have created our own cryptocurrency, and here is,
I mean,
like,
they did create a stable coin.
Sure, but like, let's say that they create a whole other currency.
Yeah, Coinbase
and
dust.
They give you like a white paper, and they say, this is why this cryptocurrency is important, and here's $50 free of Coinbase token, whatever
you'll get
you
another
call
50
it.
For each friend you invite.
Yeah, coin or whatever they want to call it.
I'm going for Coinbase dust, CBD.
CBD dust. Do you remember Mark Cuban created that social network called Dust?
I don't remember that. I think he was just an investor in that. But he was shilling it hard on his Twitter.
He was shilling it hard, And it was, I downloaded it because he was saying that he was going to release all like information about the Mavs on Dust. You know, he was going to give out his press releases on Dust.
I feel like Mark Cuban is like a crypto dude before crypto. I know he doesn't like actually like crypto.
Yeah.
But he is like similarly aggro. Like I could totally see Mark Cuban arguing with many, many crypto celebrities.
I think
on
the
stage.
Reason he doesn't like crypto is because he's like, they're taking all my tricks. You know? They just took my playbook and they made so much money off of it. Well, I'm stuck here trying to build this basketball team and I have to go on Shark Tank all the time.
He got Luka. He can't complain.
Yeah, well, he's doing good now. Okay, so if they did that, right, and we don't have to say that they had pictures of presents on the Coinbase website, but, if Coinbase has a airdrop of this thing and they advertise it and you get free Coinbase token, Coin or CPD, whatever it's called, would you go back on and would you sell that stuff? Would you trade it? Would you be a more active Coinbase user than you are right now?
Here's what I would do. If Coinbase gave me Coinbase gratitude coin, I would immediately sell it at market for Bitcoin and leave that Bitcoin in my...
So you would do a transaction, though?
Yeah, and I think that's notable because that's basically... I remember I had that coin XSN, I think, and it wasn't XSN. I had some coin that had... It wasn't even an airdrop. It was a quasi-fork situation. I basically somehow got another coin.
Oh, yeah, I remember this, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know, people, listeners to the show can probably remember. I think I've talked about the show. I sold it immediately for Bitcoin. So what you could say ultimately is that I just got a little tiny bit of free Bitcoin, right?
Yeah.
And that would be the case if you gave me this Coinbase thing, I traded it for Bitcoin. But the interesting thing there is so what's really happening is some free Bitcoin is being issued, but you have to buy it. It doesn't get issued to you. You have to trade and buy it, which I think creates volume and positive pressure on Bitcoin itself. Like having all of this down market slop that's running into the gutters and flowing slowly into Bitcoin, I think is maybe part of what we saw with Bitcoin.
Yeah. And I actually think that if they did that, there would be some economy like there is for BNB around that token itself too. But I think the most important thing, if we're putting ourselves in the Silicon Valley mindset that you talked about.
Yeah.
As a no coiner for several months.
Yeah.
I didn't open Coinbase for months.
Why would you?
Why would I? I had no coins in it and I was more or less uninterested in what the price of Bitcoin was.
Yeah.
And if I had gotten free Bitcoin just to sell it, right?
Yeah.
Then I would have sold that off into Bitcoin, and then I would have been interested in the price of Bitcoin, And then whatever addictive personality degeneracy that I have...
You'd be hooked.
...would start going in, and I would start having thoughts ooh, Ethereum's down to $86. Maybe I should also buy a little bit of Ethereum.
Why not?
Yeah, and then, and then I've in 2 months mortgaged my house and, taken out my daughter's college.
I think we're kind of on to something here a little bit. Crypto only has one usable product right now. There's only one fun thing to do with crypto, and that's to buy it and to sell it and to look at the price and play the gamified trading game.
Yeah.
All of the other crypto products don't really work at this point. So the only thing that keeps active user base of crypto up is training being fun and interesting.
Yeah.
So it's a weird thing. I sort of believe in Bitcoin maximalism, which is to say the only one of these assets I actually really believe in is Bitcoin in the long run. But it does feel like from a user perspective, at least in that Silicon Valley mindset, they need all that trading. They need that altcoin market or it's dead just from a pop cultural and things to actually do that are fun, outlook.
Let's say one of us is a bookie, right? Or running a casino.
Theoretically you.
And for whatever reason, I as Jay the bookie have hit an amazing streak where all of my customers are on one side of every game and they lose, right? And I've basically bankrupted my customers.
All profits, no payouts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is not what bookies try and do. I know this, so please don't write into the show, but it is not a bad outcome for them.
I'm not theoretically a bad bookie, okay?
Yeah, or delusional about what lines are. But at that point, you have a bunch of people who are probably stopping betting, right? Because they're broke.
Right.
And so what if you give them a free bet, then they're going to come back and make that free bet. And some percentage of them will win and cash out, although I think that's a very small, small, small percentage. But most of them will either lose and get back into gambling, or they'll win and double down and gamble again, you know? And so then you
just described the loan shark industry.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean.
The free giveaway is given, but yeah, you have to give it back.
Yeah, no, but that's what I mean. Like, what we're basically describing here, that what, you know, like, it seems like what BitHum did,
yeah,
and what I think we both agree that maybe some exchanges should do in America,
yeah,
is that they've essentially just, they're acting like a bookie who has given out, like, a, or even a drug dealer who's given out, like, a little bit of the product, you know, yeah, just to get people hooked again.
Yeah. First and, batch free, baby.
You know who else does this, by the way?
Who?
It, like, Robinhood does this.
Yeah.
You know, like, when you sign up for a Robinhood account, and I cannot believe that this is legal, you yeah know, or, like, that this passes regulations, but if you sign up for a Robinhood account and you're referred by a friend, they give you a free stock. You know, and
yeah,
they don't,
I
like,
got that.
It's basically
$3 or something like that.
No, no, no. It's like a lottery. So you
can
get, like, your one free stock could be Apple or Amazon or
yeah
something like that.
I see this all the time because I get push notified for that stock. And I'm always like, what is that?
Yeah.
And then
yeah
I'm like, oh, yeah, that's my free Robinhood
yeah
stock.
I got, like, Chesapeake Energy or something like yeah that. That was like $3. Most of them, or Sprint, I think I got too. But they are clearly doing that because they're just seeding the pot, right? Like
yeah
it's really not hard for them to give out one free $3 stock, and you see that stock go up and down and up and down, and then you get hooked into the action of it, and then you want to do more.
Is it possible that Crypto Dude stole it from Mark Cuban's swag, and then Robinhood just stole crypto like style trading and has just applied it to the stock market at this point?
Yeah, and they all took it from drug dealers who, like, give out a little
now
bit of product.
Now you're talking.
They all get out a little bit of product. So I think that, yeah, I think we've cracked the case now. Like,
okay.
That Coinbase should act more like a drug dealer if Bitcoin's price wants to go
so
back
is
up.
Our overall message, Brian Armstrong, please prime the pump?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't care yeah either
send
way
out some swag.
But, like, I think that that is probably would be somewhat affected.
I think you're right. Like, at this point, people should be doing more to manipulate the price of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Just do all sorts of crazy shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
get
you know,
a fucking
like,
Super Bowl commercial, for Christ's sake.
Where's the Coinbase Wheel of Fortune game? Like, I would play it. Wouldn't you play it?
Yeah. Or, like, someone needs to do, like, an airdrop festival Super Bowl ad.
Oh my God, that would be great. There should just be a new, someone should launch an exchange where, you know, like where you get some sort of seeded thing. And then, you know, if you take your funds out of Coinbase and they can tell that it comes
ooh
from a Coinbase holding wallet, they give you like,
I like where you're going with this, where you start the company that if you move your Bitcoin from Coinbase to us, we'll give you like this super secret one-time coin. It's
yeah
only, it has to be, it's only on Super Bowl Sunday.
It's like the fucking, it's like the credit card companies. That's what they do, right?
Yeah. They
yeah
give you all kinds of crazy shit. Think about how much credit card companies are trying to juice the market. They're like, okay, we charge fees, but we're actually going to give you more than that amount back and a bunch of airline miles. And if someone steals this, we'll cover your loss just because we need like daily active users on our shit. And when this system's pumping, we're making tons of fucking money.
Yeah.
So let's keep doing it. That's what all these exchanges need to do.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think that we're in agreement that the crypto needs to become scammier.
Is there anything else we should cover this week?
Well, what else is going on in the news?
Well, like, I did notice that your perspective changed almost instantly once you became a coiner again, because you were like, you posted something that like Bitfinex posted that, oh, I will say that the one upward bounce was still like accompanied by like potential Tether printer action.
Yeah, yeah.
I know Ledger tells me I'm fudding when I say that, but so someone posted that like, and you were like, that guy needs to shut up. And I was like, oh, Jay has coins again.
Yeah. Also, the last 10 minutes of this show where I've been encouraging Brian Armstrong to like make Coinbase scammier so
yeah
that the price goes
yeah
up.
You were like, you got real like self-righteous as a no-coiner. And the minute you had like 0.3 Bitcoin, you were like, whistleblowers should be shot.
What's he doing? Yeah, yeah. Look, it's not a very complicated psychology going on here. It is just self-interest. But I don't know. I'm actually glad that I'm back in Coinland, because even at this very small level, because it is a lot more fun to have crypto-based conversations with
coins.
Well,
it's great to have you back. Thank you. I'm going to give you a hypothetical here, because I'm interested in how you're viewing this market. If Bitcoin goes up, will you buy more?
No.
And if Bitcoin goes down, will you buy more?
I think that if there is a violent move down to, say, like 1,800, I would probably buy more. Mm-hmm. And the reason I would do that is because I would be doubling down and I would be saying, all right, well, this would be the calculations in my head. And, you know, this is not financial advice. And second caveat being that I have a, you know, gambling problem.
Yeah.
So
your whole life's one big airdrop festival.
God, I wish.
Can we make airdrop festival t-shirts? I think I love the name of our conference being ConCon, but I'd say if we called it airdrop festival, that's also a strong second. Yeah. Or maybe ConCon colon the airdrop
yeah,
festival.
Yeah, we just need a subtitle. Yeah. The reason why I would do that is because I think that the best case scenario right now, right, is that if you look at any type of market cycle, that we're in sort of the right-hand part of that, right? Like, we're in the shit. And at some point, because it is called a cycle, it goes back up,
sure.
Right? And I think that any chance that you have to catch it anywhere near the bottom,
right,
is going to be the most profitable way to do it.
Yeah.
And the risk, obviously, is that we have no idea what the bottom is. Like, so, you know, like that, this is the same mentality, I think, that some of our friends who have been pushing us to invest in uranium stocks have, is that uranium is so wrecked that it must be the bottom of the market cycle.
I feel like it's down like 20% since that statement.
So one of mine is down much more than that. our uranium prospecting has not been going well, but to be fair to our friend who has been pushing us to buy uranium stocks, the entire market has crashed, so it's hard to tell.
Yeah, you would have had this done the same thing if you'd bought FANG.
Yeah, exactly. You would actually maybe, if you had bought Netflix or Activision, you'd be more wrecked than uranium. So you kind of want to catch the bottom. You don't know if it's the actual bottom, but you can kind of make guesses that maybe we're close to it, you know?
Right.
And I think if we were at 1,800, I'd be like, well, I don't know. How much more could it possibly go down? Now, does that mean that, like, I'm basically where you were at 6,000 when you're like, how much more could it possibly go down?
I think I said that at like 12,000 probably.
Yeah. You definitely said that at 9,000. You're like, Bitcoin cannot possibly be only up.
It is mathematically impossible.
Yeah, for it to only be four numbers. It must be five numbers.
If it goes up to 4,500 tomorrow.
I'll sell.
Really?
Insta-sell,
Because you will feel like you're no longer buying at the bottom, or because you will think it's going to go crash back down?
Yeah, my suspicion would be that it would crash back down.
What would make you think, oh no, the next bull run is here, not, oh, it's going to crash back down?
If it went to like 6,000, and then that's when I would probably buy back
okay,
in.
So you would, on some sort of a bull confirmation, you would buy again?
Yeah, but remember, this is how I lost so much money trading on the way up. I like kept exiting, and then it would go up 20% more, and then I'd get furious, and then I would buy back in.
You're like a cat that like wants to go outside, and then it wants to come back in, and then it wants to go outside, and it's always like scratching at one side of a glass door.
Yeah, that is me. That is me. I'm glad that behavior, which I had basically canceled out of my life by not being in crypto, is back.
Any other final thoughts?
No. Well, how about you? Like, how do you feel about it? Like, I know that your general response to this is, I'm already all in and I can't buy anymore.
I mean, that is true. I'd say the scariest thing I'm doing, I have a dark confession to make, which is I was like on our Twitter account posting our episode, and like a Tone Vase YouTube, like hour and a half TA thing came up, and I don't know about you, but I cannot take my eyes off of this stuff right now. I just sat there and watched the entire thing of him just like—
An hour and a half?
I watched it for way too long. He had another guy on.
Did you learn anything?
Actually, I learned a lot. The scariest thing I learned is that basically, so like Ethereum bottomed out, like hit like I think 85, maybe it was even like 83 for a second, but they were like, basically, below that is nothing. there's like no support for Ethereum under that.
So they feel like it could go
to like $15.
Wow. Do you have Ethereum?
I'm like a third of my portfolio is Ethereum.
Oh no. Why would you not sell?
Well, because it's at like an all-time low against Bitcoin right now. I mean, I wouldn't sell because like I've been buying it on the way down. My strategy was to like wait till both recover and feel like it's eventually going to recover more than Bitcoin. But there's definitely more stops along the way. I think the overall story of what we're saying, what I'm saying here is, comparatively, Bitcoin is not as wrecked as the rest of the shit yet.
Okay. I mean, yeah, but it's still completely wrecked.
No, I mean, but that's kind of what makes me a little worried about like 1800.
Yeah.
Like Bitcoin has emerged a little more unscathed and there's like a little bit more confidence in Bitcoin.
Well, I mean, but that's for good reason though.
I agree.
Yeah. Would you buy at 1800?
Bitcoin?
Yeah.
I literally all the money I have to put in is in.
Would you, like, you wouldn't mortgage anything or sell your car?
No. Someone hit my car. My car is worth, even at this low, less than one Bitcoin.
I don't think that's true. I think your car is worth, like, 1.5 Bitcoin.
Jay, that is a 2004 Toyota Matrix.
Okay, yeah, maybe it might be worth less.
I will sell it to you for one Bitcoin right now.
That's true. Okay, but yeah, actually, I didn't know it was that old. it probably isn't worth one Bitcoin. Would you trade your car for one Bitcoin right now?
I feel like it's a good game show. You get people off the street who don't know the price of Bitcoin, and you say, would you trade your car for one Bitcoin? And they can't look up the price of Bitcoin. All right. What do you say for our next episode or sometime soon? Should we do another deep dive?
Yeah.
I think the one I'm the most excited about, we often do deep dives as coins get opened up to Coinbase. I feel like it's a little bit of all right, it's been validated. At least it's this legit enough to like spend the 17 minutes we do researching the coins for these deep dives, which are neither deep nor dives particularly. I say we do Decentraland and their token Mana, which I think Coinbase was one of the 31 coins they said they were exploring.
Okay, yeah, Decentraland is, I think we've talked about it on the show before.
Yeah, well, we had Tony Shang on the show, and he works at Decentraland. It's like a virtual world. I think it has different districts. There's one that's like an AR district they're building. People buy land in it. I guess Mana is the token. And there is a fund, as I understand it, that is investing in items and things built within Decentraland.
Okay, maybe we can, much like we built a Augur Market, maybe we should buy.
Should we get ourselves a little plot?
Yeah, we should start homesteading on Decentraland.
I don't know. Do you think we can afford a plot?
We're gonna have to figure it out.
Do you think a plot costs more or less than my car?
The smallest plot of all. That's what you should do.
Yeah, maybe we should set the standard up. We should sell my car and buy whatever land we can get with
it. Or we'll just put out an ad on Twitter being like, we'll trade Aaron's car for land in Decentraland.
Very special airdrop. One 2004 Toyota Matrix.
Oh, man. All right. Well, okay. Let's do that.
Okay. Right, next cool. time. Later.
All right.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Saturday, December 8th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $3,399.
Thanks for listening to Coin Talk, even when your portfolio is in the toilet. We appreciate it, and we are here with you. I'm Aaron Lammer. My co-host is Jay Kang. Our editor is James Nicholson. You can always get in touch with us, hi@cointalk.show. If we get some good mail, we might just do a mailbag for the Christmas season, Christmas mailbag. We have been getting some great sponsor requests, and I want to thank our sponsors, and I want to encourage other people to sponsor the show. If you sponsor the show, we'll do more shows. So everybody wins. The listeners win. The sponsors win. And we, your hosts, win. See you next week.